So what I'm going to say today comes out of a collective project called Around 1968 Activism Networks Trajectories, and it's a project which involves about 13 or 14 historians working on the same number of countries in Europe, and we have a database of interviews and transcripts which will shortly be launched, and we're writing a series of articles and a book. Now, most people, when they say that they're working on oral history, have to give a half-hour defense of the pitfalls and positives of oral history. I'm not going to do that because I haven't got time, except that to say possibly three things: that oral history, the life history interviews that we do, gives us the possibility of finding an interplay between external events and individual subjectivity. We don't see that the interviews that we record gives us any sense of embedded fact, but what it gives us is an insight into how individuals make sense of their past 40 years later. And we're also aware that this is a study in memory and it's a study in narrative. Now, what I'm going to say this afternoon is divided into, I think, five parts. In the first part, I'm going to talk about the way in which activists from 1968, and I'm taking a sample of 1968 activists, all of whom belong to an outfit called the Union des Etudiants Communistes, and most of whom turned out to be Maoists, but not all. I'm afraid we've had a pretty poor showing for women today, and I have to confess that of my activists, nine are men and two are women. But in the first part, I'm going to look at how they refer to their background, particularly their families, and the extent to which their families were involved in the resistance or not, and how they define their own activism in the light of that. Then I go on to talk about how, in the 1960s, resistance changes sides. So resistance is not so much about the French resistance, but the resistance of colonial countries to France and other colonial imperial powers. I'll then talk a bit about which resistance do they talk about when they talk about the resistance. I'll then talk about May 68 and how they talk about May 68 and whether references to the French resistance are significant for May 68. And then I'll talk about a very important moment, which is actually post 68, where references to the resistance really start to make sense. Now, I'm using PowerPoint not because I like it, in fact I hate it, but because when you work with oral history, we have a principle that you have to pay a great deal of attention to the kind of language that these people are using. So there'll be quite decent quotes coming up, but I sort of light them with pictures of these people. So first of all, I'm going to talk about I've got three individuals who refer to the resistance activities of their parents in a very positive way, and then three individuals who have much more difficult or ambiguous relationship with what their parents were doing during the First World War. So I'm not going to read out these quotes. You can read them out for yourself. But this first guy is a guy called Olivier Rollin, who was a Maoist. And as you can see, he says that he was almost relieved that his father was in the Free French. He said he would not have liked to have had a Vichyist father. Another positive story comes from Jean-Pierre Le Dantec, where he talks about the filial piety that he owes to his parents. His father was in the Franc-Tireur et Partisans in Brittany. His mother, he said, was also active in the resistance. His aunt married a returning communist deporté from Buchenwald. So for him, the resistance background of his parents leads him to this filial piety. And then a guy who you will not have heard of, I should think, a man called Jean Bijawi, who was of Tunisian origin. He was Jewish Tunisian origin. His parents emigrated from Tunisia after independence in 1957. And he talks about his father as a war hero, sorry, his uncle as a war hero. And he said, we young activists all had an account to settle with heroism. There was something we had to keep going. But I've also got other accounts which kind of give you a different story. So the first one is a guy called Yves Cohen, born in 1951. Now, he was an interesting character whose parents were both hard, heavy-duty communists during the war, and he was involved as a young communist but turned against the Communist Party. And so what the point that he makes is that he's quite ambivalent about the resistance background of his parents. He hated the fact that they were Communist Party stalwarts. But he said he couldn't help admiring particularly his mother, who was sent to Auschwitz on a convoy in January 43, not as Jewish, but as a resistor. I mean, she was Jewish, but she was not known to be Jewish. She went as a resistor. He said there was so although he had this hostility to his parents, he said there was also a constant homage rendered to my parents who had been resistors, the fact that my mother had been deported. And I'm going to introduce two people without showing you pictures of them now. You'll see pictures of them later. These are two individuals whose parents were not involved in the resistance and who felt bad about it. And in a sense, their activism in 68 and around 68, and indeed during the Algerian War, was a revolt against their parents. The first one is a lady called Dominique Grange, whose father was a prisoner of war during the First World War. She was born in 1940, so she didn't know her father until he came back from prisoner of war camp, but she was about five. She was very scornful of her father, who attempted to reassert his authority in the family. She had much more affection and reverence for her grandfather, who was a veteran of the Great War. So she's one character who shows, if you like, disappointment and frustration with the parental role during the Second World War. Another guy who I'll come back to is called Michel-Antoine Burnier, born in 1942 to a very Catholic, if not Action Française, family, Vichyist indeed. And I'll come back to him, but for them, essentially, activism in 68 was a revolt against their parents. And then I've got the case of André Sénic, who was born in 1938 to Polish-Jewish parents. His father was a shoemaker. He himself was hidden in a Red Cross home during the war. And when he was 14, his parents wanted him to go to a kibbutz in Israel. He refused. He joined the Young Communists and was a representative at the Moscow Youth Festival in 1957. And you can see he says here, as a young person, the important thing was not to be like one's parents, above all, not to be a little, discreet, fearful little Jewish boy. So in a sense, what he felt towards his parents was shame. His father was also in hiding during the war, separated from him. So he felt a kind of shame about having to hide from the Vichy authorities and from the Germans, and I'll come back to that later. So the second main point I want to make is that the cult of the resistance, or references to the resistance, rather take a back seat in the 1960s towards the end of the Algerian War, because at the time of the Algerian War, it was clear to young activists, and one of the big shocks that in a sense they suffered was that France was no longer the country of resistance, fighting for liberation from German occupation. Rather, France, during the Algerian War, was opposing the struggles of other peoples, of colonized nations, for liberation. And in this, the French government was supported, or seemed to be supported, by fascists of the OAS and other sort of right-wing bodies. Worst of all for these young activists, the French army was using, or was seen to be using, the same torture methods against suspected Algerian rebels as the Gestapo had used against French resistors. Now, when we talk about the activists of 68, some of them are the famous post-war generation, born from 1945 onwards. But there are also quite a lot of older 68 activists who were born either during the war or just before the war, as we have seen. And so essentially their radical apprenticeship was during the Algerian War, and then afterwards they were seduced and intrigued by these wars of national liberation that were going on in Cuba, Latin America, North Africa, Black Africa, and of course sponsored by the Chinese at the time of the Cultural Revolution, and there was Vietnam and so on. So that for them, resistance seemed to have switched from French resistance to anti-French resistance. And this was the period of what you might call tiers-mondism. So all these people are kind of heavily tiers-mondist and inspired by things like the Chinese Cultural Revolution, which is why they become Maoists. Having said that, what you can see in some of their accounts is a kind of a sort of subliminal reference to resistance. It's still there. The French resistance is still there in their consciousness, and I'll come back to that. Okay, first quote is from Alain Gesmard, who most of you will come across. Now, he was born to a Jewish family which had moved from Alsace after 1870. His father was a banker, who enrolled in the army and was killed in 1940. And this is what Gesmar said. He says that his father had fought in 1940, was killed in 1940, and to Gesmar, he was the perfect man. So when I discovered that men wearing the same uniform were using torture in Algeria, it was a very powerful shock. It led to a rapid, immediate, almost spontaneous political awakening. So this was, a lot of these resistors talk about their shock about when they discover the fact of torture, and this is Gesmar's version of it. Michel-Antoine Bernier is a very complex case because he comes from this right-wing background. He's brought up with this heavy, heavy Catholic right-wing education. Then he discovers Sartre, and he discovers that Sartre is an opponent of the Algerian War, and he gets to meet one of Sartre's disciples, the man on the top left called Francis Chanson, who had an organization for sort of clandestinely helping the Algerian networks, the FLN. And what the point that he makes here is that by getting involved in the struggle against the French presence in Algeria, they were trying to clobber fascism in a way that their parents and their parents' generation has not. We fought straight away, and those who trained us were the generation of the resistance. And when he talks about the generation of the resistance, he's talking about people like Francis Chanson. Next example, Thierno Grumbach, again another born 1939. He's an interesting character. He was actually the nephew of Pierre Mendès France, who, in fact, was imprisoned by Vichy, joined the Free French, was actually responsible for taking France out of Tunisia, but didn't take the same view. He thought that France should hold on to Algeria. Now, Thierno also, like Senik, was in hiding under the occupation as a Jewish child. Then he was at the same school as André Senik, the Lycée Janson de Sailly in the 16th, where during the Algerian War he joins this anti-fascist committee. Now, the point about where the resistance comes in is this. He talks about the comics that he read, and in particular this comic La Bête est morte, where he says there was a wonderful comic strip called La Bête est morte in which the resistors were little rabbits. Now, after the independence of Algeria in 1962, Thierno went out to Algeria with medical supplies. They were nicknamed the Pieds Rouges. So the Pieds Noirs came back from Algeria, and the Pieds Rouges went to Algeria to sort of take part in the Revolutionary Party. And he became involved in this, third world activism. He went to China, he visited China, he became a Maoist. And yet at the same time, he does have this kind of reflex about the French resistance, and in particular, the Jewish communist resistance. And as you can see here, he's particularly interested in the case of the group Manoukian, who were a group of foreigners and Jewish foreigners who were tried in this rather spectacular trial. The Germans were trying to discredit the resistance as full of foreigners and Jews. They made this enormous thing about these people who they captured and who were executed on the 21st of February 1943. So what Thierno Grumbach is saying is that we, as young Maoists in the mid to late 60s, we revived the cult of the Manoukian group. So it was a particular kind of resistance organization and movement that they were interested in. And this leads to me to my third point, which is, when these Act 68 activists talk about the resistance, which resistance are they talking about? Are they talking about the sort of internal resistance, the communist resistance, or are they talking about the Free French? And as I've said, Olivier Rollin was, of course, the son of a military man, an officer who joined the Free French. And in spite of that inspiration, as you saw, he expressed a relief that his father wasn't pro-Vichy, but he himself later said, we were terribly anti-Gaullist. So he draws this distinction between the Gaullist resistance, which was simply interested in seizing state power and disarming the people, and the internal resistance, the communist resistance, where their sympathies lay. And they were going to continue that kind of internal communist resistance. And I'm now going to cheat by giving you a picture of someone who I haven't interviewed for the simple reason that he's dead. But he was referred to by Grumbach. I'm using this case as a very pointed example of a young man of Polish Jewish origin, like Sinek, whose father had been involved in the resistance in the Lyon area. Goldman subsequently came to a very sticky end. He was tried for murder and was subsequently killed in 1979. So it's a bit of a tragic case. But he does say, I grew up in the memory of the resistance, of a certain resistance, that of the Jewish communists. Who is preserving the memory of these giants, the story of their fight? So when we talk about cult of the resistance, I think there are different sorts of resistance, but very powerful in the imagination of these young people, particularly of 68 activists of Jewish origin, is the memory of the Jewish communist resistance. Okay, so how far does this impact on 68? Was the memory of the French resistance a factor in May 68? And the short answer is not really. Pierre Goldman, for example, was not very impressed. I mean, he'd been off joining a resistance, a guerrilla group in... he'd been off to Cuba, and then he comes back in 68, and he proposes to the 22nd of March group, which is one of the leading groups in 68, he says, why don't you try armed action? And they regard him as an idiot, and so he goes off to join a resistance group in Venezuela. So this is the kind of, you know, that was his perspective on 68, that he wasn't, you know, he didn't think it was at all impressive in the resistance terms. Having said that, there was a lot of confusion in the broader, what you might call, movement of May 68. What did it all mean? To these young Marxist activists, what did the movement mean? Was it a youth movement? Was it a student movement? Was it a workers' movement? And how could they gain a purchase on it? So my main point is that these Marxist activists spent a lot of time trying to sort of get a handle on what was going on, and it wasn't immediately clear. So if you look at our friend Jean Bijoui, he talks about a famous attack on an exhibition. It's always known by this 44 Rue de Rennes. And in this Rue de Rennes exhibition, it was an exhibition basically by right-wing people, right-wing groups, celebrating the contribution of the Americans and the North and the South Vietnamese to the struggle. So these young radicals who were against that went and smashed up the exhibition. But the point is, he uses a language which is about fascism, a sort of generic language about fascism, anti-fascism and Bolshevism, rather than anything particularly to do with the French resistance. Here's a woman, Françoise Pic, who later becomes a prominent feminist. And she says that her memory of 68, her initial memory, is when she wants to go to a class on Friday the 3rd of May, and she can't get into the class because the police have arrested people and closed the Sorbonne. But she makes this interesting reference about the CRS riot police reminding her about the Gestapo. Now, again, you can argue, you know, is this what she thought at the time? Is this what she thought later? Happy to discuss that. Okay, then for André Sinek. When I interviewed André Sinek, one of the things I kept coming back to is why so many young Jewish people were involved in 68. And he tried, you know, he talked about messianism and he talked about radicalism. And eventually, at the end of the interview, he came up with this explanation that being revolutionary for Jews was thus a paradoxical and rather aggressive way of becoming part of a society instead of having to hide. So it's like an emergence from the ghetto. And the great moment for them was the demonstration on the 24th of May, if you remember, when Cohn-Bendit has left the country, has refused access back, and people come out and demonstrate. Now, it's interesting that in the poster it says, "Nous sommes tous des Juifs et des Allemands," whereas what André Sénic remembers, and other people tend to quote, is "Nous sommes tous des Juifs allemands." We are all German Jews. But for him, it was a magic moment when young repressed, Jewish people who had conflict with their parents about what Judaism was and what should Jews be fighting for Israel, or should they be fighting for world revolution. This all comes out, and they seem to sort of have some sort of reconciliation with revolution. Okay, last instance, well, next to last instance, Michel-Antoine Bourdieu. He, by 68, was a journalist, and he was involved in a newspaper called Action, but he's much more interested in what you might call the movement, that he sees the movement of May 68, not in terms of resistance, but in terms of a sort of cultural revolution. And so he gets involved in this, and he's much more, when you talk to him, he's much more interested in the sort of artwork, the cartoons, the cultural revolution. He's not so much interested in the politics. However, he does have this link to the resistance, which is his relationship with Emmanuel Dastier de la Vigerie, who was one of the great leaders of Libération Sud during the resistance. And Bourdieu had been involved in his paper, L'Evénement. And Bourdieu's own father had been this right-wing Catholic Vichy person who he had a poor relationship with, but suddenly he gets into this relationship with Dastier, and as you can see here, he says, I took his wife for my mother, his sons for my brothers, I took him for my father. By the end of 68, the sense of 68 is beginning to emerge for a lot of activists. And the moment when this seems to happen, arguably, is the struggle outside the Renault Flin factory. The Renault Flin factory west of Paris is one of the last to go back to work in June 68. And Yves Cohen was a friend of this young student called Gilles Totin, who was killed in that Flin incident. He was also, Yves Cohen says, obsessed by this other factory, the Peugeot factory at Sochaux, where the other two victims of 68 died, two workers died. And he says he was drawn almost subconsciously to the place in 68 where these people had been killed. And so you're starting to get a kind of picture of class struggle and revolution emerging after 68. And at that point, what I'd like to say is that at that point, the cult of the resistance begins to make sense and begins to kick in with a particular force. One or two other things that you need to know is that these 68 activists had a rather difficult relationship with de Gaulle, because de Gaulle was a kind of quasi-dictator, but he was also the man of the 18 juin, the man of the resistance. Pompidou, when he succeeded, was someone who had nothing to do with the resistance. He wanted to, he said, well, people should stop talking about all this resistance stuff. He pardoned Touvier and so on. So he wasn't in that bracket at all. And also there was a great deal of repression of Marxist groupuscule. They were closed down. And gauchistes were thrown into prison. I mean, in 1970, quite a lot of these people were in prison, either for inciting violence or for reconstituting dissolved organizations. And this is the period when a lot of these Maoists go off and found an organization called the Gauche Proletarienne, which wanted to rekindle class war, hence the name. But my point would be that they do now make specific reference to the French resistance, and the French resistance does come into its own as a way of legitimating the violence that they defend in the battle with the bourgeois state. So here we have Dominique Grange, who you encountered, I mentioned her earlier, her father was the POW. She, in the 60s, was a left-bank singer and TV hostess. But when 68 comes along, she takes her guitar and she goes down to the striking workers of Boulogne-Billancourt and starts singing revolutionary songs. Then she joins the Gauche Proletarienne, and she is the she composes this anthem, Les Nouveaux Partisans, which is the sort of battle cry of the Gauche Proletarienne, and there she is at the time. Another quote, Jean-Pierre Le Dantec, who becomes the editor of the Gauche Proletarienne's paper, La Cause du Peuple, and he's thrown into prison. And after that, Jean-Paul Sartre becomes the editor of the paper, and there he is handing out copies. But the interesting thing about Le Dantec is, first of all, he says, our thought at the time was that we were a new resistance. So he's specifically talking about identifying with the resistance at that time. He also has another son-father relationship with a resistor called Maurice Clavel, who is a sort of left-wing Gaullist. And as he explains here, there's a cult. Le Dantec is in awe before Clavel, and Clavel is sort of writing a book about the 68ers, and they have this kind of mutual admiration relationship. Now, I'm coming to an end very soon. The last thing I really want to say is that this cult of the resistance sort of comes to an end with the descent into violence. In 1972, there are two very important events. First of all, one of the militants of the gauche prolétarienne, a sort of ex-worker called Pierre Auvernet, is assassinated outside the Renault factory where he is agitating. And the gauche prolétarienne have to say, well, do we respond to violence by violence, or do we not? And that was a huge moment. And of course, they were also aware of, you know, the Red Brigades and what's going on in Germany. And they're also the sort of leaders of international revolutionary action are now, you know, it's no longer Cuba, it's no longer China, it's the Palestine Liberation Front. And of course, these are the people who kill the German hostages at the Munich Olympics of September 72. So the GP has to decide, do we go with revolution or don't we? And in a sense, they decide, really, most of them decide not to. And here is a quote from our friend Olivier Rollin. And I think Luke earlier on mentioned the leap strike of which kicks off at this point, 73, I think. And Olivier Rollin makes the point that all these sort of gauchis who believe had this very romantic idea of revolution and resistance realize that the workers who they've been trying for a couple of years to get moving have got moving on their own, have taken over a factory, have begun production of watches again. It was a watch factory, and they had no use whatsoever for these gauchists. And Olivier Rollin says, you know, they were led by this Dominican father, a guy called Jean Ragnès, who you can see on the right of the picture. And this was the point at which most of the gauche proletarians said, you know, the workers are doing it without us, they no longer lead us. However, there is the final code of the story is our friend Dominique Grange again. She's one of the few people to continue with sort of revolutionary action. She explains here that she was caught, her flat caught fire while she was making a Molotov cocktail, and she has to go underground. What's interesting is that she talks about Mackie, she talks about clandestinité. She basically sees herself as an underground resistance fighter. And my last clip, she put me onto an interview, which is one of the probably the scariest interviews I did, because it was an interview with a terrorist. Here he is, who is the leader of Action Directe, and I managed to interview him in Marseille on one of his day release days. He's now no longer on day release, so that was lucky. But my final quote is this: is that, you know, what this was a man brought up in Toulouse. Toulouse was the capital in exile of the Spanish Republicans after the Civil War. And he was brought up in that media. And although his father, he says, was a radio operator during the resistance, the inspiration for him was not the French resistance, but the Spanish Civil War. So in conclusion, the first point I make is that these 68 resistors have an ambivalent relationship to their parents and what their parents did in the resistance. For some, you know, their parents are heroes, although even those who were parents nevertheless had an ambivalent relationship with them. Other 68 activists see their parents as villains or cowards. The second point was, you know, in the 1960s, Tiers-Mondism was much more important than the resistance, although there is still a kind of resistance reflex in the minds of a lot of these activists. Resistance was not a reference in May 68, but post-May 68, during the years of repression, it does start to make sense until the point at which the gauchis had this encounter with revolutionary violence. Do we meet violence with violence, or do we not? And that's when most of them leave the resistance behind. Thank you.